baseball bat. So I just had a deep fear of my physical safety. And then my mother struggled with, you know, her mental illness and depression. And it was pretty severe. She had multiple suicide attempts starting when I was maybe 10 or 11. She started asking me to kill myself with her. She would hand me bottles of sleeping pills and tell me to take these pills with her and die because life was so hopeless. So it was a pretty rough start in the world. Food was my answer. When the truck came, the access to the candy store, you know, that was like my thing. Honestly, I'm glad better to kind of overdose on M&Ms than sleeping pills, you know? So food in some ways was my savior because it was a pretty rough start in life. When I was 13, she overdosed. She didn't die, but she lost legal custody of me because of multiple suicide attempts. And I spent the rest of my youth in a foster home. I found OA. I was 20 years old. I was 335 pounds. And someone took me to an OA meeting. I didn't know anything about it. And the meeting was in the basement of a church. And there was references to God. And people started referencing God and Jesus Christ in their shares. And I came out of a Jewish background. I wasn't religious. But I thought, oh, this is some kind of Christian weight loss program. What else would I think with references to Jesus in a church? And I said, I'm not interested in becoming Christian to not overeat. So I left. 7 years later, at 27, somebody took me to another OA meeting. And this one happened to not be in a church. And the person who was sharing was just telling their food insanity, you know, just telling the different ways they binge. And I remember this gal talked about being at a restaurant and eating food off of other people's plates before the bus person came. You know, she would just grab a half sandwich or something on somebody's plate. And I had done that, right? I had done that. And I had never heard another human being admit that they'd half eaten food off of other people's plates at a restaurant. When you think about it, that's kind of a pretty sleazy, gross thing to do, you know? And person after person shared these crazy things they did with food. And I had done them too, you know? And so I want to say first, I just identify, like, that's me. I knew there were other people that were like grossly obese, but I didn't quite know how they got there. So I was like, I just identified, that is me. And then the second thing that happened was people shared really personal, intimate things, you know, having been molested as a child, bad marriages, lying, stealing, abuse, like you name it, right? You hear all these things in the rooms, people get really vulnerable. And they share really personal things. And before OA, I had never told a soul that I had a mother who used to ask me to kill myself and was in a psychiatric hospital because of it. I never told a soul, I'm an incest survivor. I never told a soul that I was sexually abused as a child. When you think about it, unless you were in therapy, who in the world would you tell these things to, right? It's just not casual conversation with people you know meet in school or at work. And so all of a sudden, there was this incredible safe space to just share things that had been eating at me and I've been eating at for so many years, you know? And there's this saying in OA, we're as sick as our sickest secrets. And I came into OA with all these secrets. And I want to say that I feel like OA was like a gateway for recovery. You know, they say like marijuana is a gateway drug to heroin or whatever. OA was my gateway to recovery because every answer was not in OA. When I talked about being sexually abused as a child, people said, you know, we're so sorry that happened, but OA doesn't really have much of an answer for that. But there's this thing called Survivors of Incest Anonymous. You might want to check that out. When I talked about my mother and the suicide, you know, someone said, that's kind of a lot for a sponsor of the steps, but you might want to go to consider therapy. You had a pretty traumatic childhood, you know? And so people pointed me toward these other things and was so helpful. But they said, you know, what we can help you with is not being 300 pounds and not compulsively overeating. That work, that we know. The rest of it, you know, there's other places you might want to look. And so I kept doing that. I learned there was this thing called a sponsor. I heard that word. It was like a thing to get. And I got a sponsor who was sort of like a big book kind of sponsor, like a big book thumper, sometimes they call them. And then I learned of this thing called OA How. Maybe most of you have heard of it. It's a structured form of OA. You get a food plan, you weigh and measure, do a lot of tools. And I started doing both of these things and lo and behold, it worked. Lo and behold, I lost weight and was able to process a lot of emotional and trauma that had been in my life. So moving on to triggers, as somebody mentioned earlier, this is about external triggers. the way this workshop came to me was I was sponsoring a guy who kept sharing about how he was overeating on walnuts, you know, and he had good recovery otherwise. He was at his goal weight. He'd lost a lot of weight. He worked the steps, but like walnuts were just messing with him, you know. And I said, well, could you ask your wife to just not keep walnuts in the house? And she said, no, she really likes walnuts. She's not giving up walnuts for me. And I said, well, you think she would just like put it in a cabinet and keep it out of sight? And so he asked her. She said, sure. And lo and behold, he hasn't touched a walnut in a year. You know, so it made me think, wow, that's sort of obvious, right? To me, that was like almost like a duh. But I realized that over the years, a lot of people have had things trigger them that are there's easy solutions for, you know, and that's particularly easy and obvious. So this workshop is really to talk about triggers. I think of them in a few categories. These are just my categories. You could use your own. But one is food. Second is restaurants. The third is people. Fourth is activities or situations. The fifth is celebrations. And the sixth is travel. And I'm going to now go to screen share, and hopefully this will work. Pull up a little form. And let's see, there it is. Oh, wait, go with this one. Okay, and hopefully that you're all now seeing a form. If not, somebody yell. And this document, by the way, is a PDF, and it's a PDF file, which means that you can just click on little buttons if you're using it as a PDF, or you can write in your own. And for the exercise, we're going to be either, I purposely put a lot of examples on triggers here, so you can sort of like just check ones if they apply to you. These are just triggers I've heard in the rooms over 30 years. And then there's empty spaces where you can put in your own, and then we'll talk about management. And essentially, you know, a trigger is anything that moves you closer to compulsively overeating. There's like a trigger on a gun. You can't fire the gun if you don't put your hand on the trigger. Well, again, it's the same thing. The things that make us closer to losing our abstinence or overeating are triggers. And management is what you can do to lessen the trigger. You may not be able to eliminate it, but you can lessen it. And so we're just going to walk through that by these categories. So first one is food, which is, you know, the most obvious one. I just talked about nuts on the counter. Another one I've heard a lot over the years is smells. It doesn't have to just be seeing a food. Baked goods can really trigger people. I myself, if my partner goes into a bakery, I wait outside. I mean, am I going to binge because I smell this stuff? Almost surely not. But why mess with it? Why sit there and smell binge foods that I can't touch? But like, why would you do that? So I just wait outside, you know, because it's almost like indulging to smell it, you know, for me. So, you know, that's just a basic example. I also have a partner that eats all these foods I can't eat. And I've just said to her, please just try to keep them out of sight. You know, it's not like I'm going to see something and jump on it. But again, why even have that in my brain, knowing that those are the foods that, you know, could have killed me or almost killed me in the past. So that's really, you know, example of food. Food's the most obvious, you know, out of sight, out of mind. The next one is restaurants and or things related to restaurants. And I'll talk a few of my own examples. Every so often I'll end up in a buffet or a salad bar kind of thing. And, you know, those are kind of like triggering, you know, like you go there and there's 30 choices, right? And I'm curious what they all taste like, and I don't exactly know what's in them and, you know, how much to put on. And, you know, a sponsor of mine used to joke to me that he said, at a buffet, you know, never put more on a plate than you can lift. You know, that was like his kind of joke guideline. And so I learned that for me, I don't make good choices while my hands are on the, you know, tongs with things. It's just at that point, it's just not a good pace for my brain to be in. You know, it's not like I'm necessarily going to empty the salad bar, but still. So what I've learned is before I take anything, I walk around it and make a plan. I just think, okay, you're going to have one plate. It's going to have X on it, Y on it, about this much, about that much. Make that plan. And then so when I go up to it, I've already got a plan. I mean, you're already eliminated. You're not having that one. You're not having that one. You're having this one and that one, you know, and that will do it. I've heard of other people text it into their sponsor, call in the sponsor. But for me, having a plan makes it a lot easier to deal with the salad bar or buffet of any kind. Food courts sometimes can kind of be triggering for me. And I've learned that, you know, if you're going with friends and they're going to a food court, sometimes I'll just bring my own food. like they don't care, you know, and there's tables and benches there. And rather than, you know, looking at 14 different places, it can just messes with me. Not that I can't make a good choice, but sometimes it just kind of does a number on my brain. You know, I'm just got very deeply wired with food problems at a young age. So that's another example of that. New restaurants. To me, a restaurant I've never been to with like a menu I've never seen, that kind of joke that's like OA pornography, like, oh my God, what is in that? What might that taste like? What's the sauce? I wonder how big the portion is, right? Like my little brain runs this whole little script when I see a menu I've never seen before, you know? It's sort of like, what's going to be the most interesting? And sometimes the answer is before you go to that restaurant, there's this great thing called the internet. Pull up the menu at home, make that plan at home. So like when that menu comes out, I've already made the decision. I don't even need to see the menu. I'm like, okay, I know you've got salmon and broccoli and blah, blah, blah. Boom, like it's done. And if it's still messing with me, I can talk to someone before I even get there. So just like that advanced planning sometimes really helps with a restaurant. Lately, there are these things called fast casual. Maybe you have them where you're like cavas and mezzas and sweet greens. And even some of those, I can get a little messed up. So I need to talk to someone before and just have a plan. It's just so helpful to talk to another person in OA and have plans before going into, you know, tricky situations. So that's an example of restaurants, a few examples. And jump down to the third category is on the right, and that's people. What came up for me when I thought about people was when I was doing, you know, the eHarmony world and dating and stuff, I was always like, kind of awkward to take somebody out to dinner and having to like want to look normal, right? Like it's a first impression and you don't want to look like you're kind of like a little weird or different, that you're asking questions. Is there sugar in that? Da, da, da. And I just learned up front to just say something and say, you know, I've got some food allergies or some, you know, food intolerances. And, you know, so I'll be making sure I eat right. Or give the person a heads up that I may be, because, you know, I ask more questions at restaurants than your average bear because I'm watching for ingredients and stuff and triggers. So, you know, that was one example. I've heard a lot, this hasn't happened to me, of like young mothers with their children messing with their food, like wanting to take something out and try their food. And I've heard women kind of go crazy over that. And I've heard them, they just sort of have to train their children. Hey, this is mommy's food, you know, and all equally, you know, don't give me your food, you know. Just as a quick aside, made me think of a funny story. A friend of mine used to call in her food and her little three-year-old would listen. He would say, tell him what I'm going to have. I'm going to have some Cheerios and some M&Ms and what his food called in too. And I thought that was so cute. But in any case, continuing on, next category is activities and situations. So activity, situation, anything you do or you partake in, just like anything. The one that was a really big issue for me some years back was in my company, come holiday time, people would give all these gifts to our company, right? They'd give cans of cookies and chocolates and stuff, right? It would be put out in the kitchen. And that was really a problem for me. I was sort of just trying to get abstinent at that point. And I would walk into that kitchen just to get my lunch and there'd be like seven things that were like I couldn't eat. I remember once really losing it, you know, the boxes of chocolate with those little maps telling you what's in it, is, you know, raspberry or this. Oh my God, I would like read those maps and it was like crazy making. It was just crazy making. And I learned that time of year, just don't go into the kitchen. Like, don't go into the kitchen. I was just trying to get abstinent, you know, after a relapse. And I just did not need to be around the worst binge foods for me. And so keep my lunch at my desk or find some way to not go into that kitchen. And eventually I was even able to work out for that stuff, not even to be stored there. And there was another place where it was put out, you know, because particularly when you're coming out and you're fragile, you know, it's like just out of sight, out of mind, you know, why walk into the fiery pit? Another one was samples. My nutritionist said to me, you know, if you want to have some samples at a supermarket, if they're this and that, it's okay. And that started to get like not the best thing for me. And I learned to like actually avoid samples. If you ever go to like a Costco or something, right, there's all these people saying, try this. And, you know, that wasn't that wasn't a good thing for me, you know, particularly maybe like a piece of fruit, but much beyond that. So just learning, like, don't even walk down that aisle, you know, just you see that person, duck, you know, go the other way. And just to be aware, some places are going to throw samples at you, you know. Leftovers can sometimes be a thing. Like, you know, I always sort of joke, better to send it to the trash or the compost into my waistline. Just learning to not obsess about every leftover having to be eaten, get into that whole money psyche thing. So those are some examples of activities and situations. Celebrations. I've probably heard more people share about losing their abstinence around holidays than maybe any other thing. You know what they call it? The trifecta or the triple crown of overeating. You know, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's, or Halloween, Thanksgiving, and, you know, Christmas, Hanukkah. You know, those are just times where there's so much food around. I've heard, I don't know, so many times people struggling with the trick-or-treat thing. You know, the whole thing about, you know, having to pass out the candy. And, you know, at the end of the day, what's our strategy? Just don't give out candy. Give out something else, little stickers or some toy or something other than candy. Or, you know, worse yet, better yet, have somebody else answer the door. Or if need be, just don't have trick-or-treaters come. If you're newly getting abstinent, like, well, do you want to maybe lose those 2 hours of seeing the tykes and the cool outfits, or risk having a relapse that puts 50 pounds on you over the next 3 months? You know, it's sort of like, why play with fire, you know? And a lot of triggers are sort of like defensive, you know what I mean? Like, not necessarily anything will happen in these situations, but if there's even like a little bit of pushing it, why go there, you know? Just like, why go there? Put a lock on the trigger, you know? It's that kind of thing. Potlucks, that has been challenging for me. You know, sometimes they're not so lucky for me, you know, like you kind of go there. And again, it's like, what's going to show up? Oh, what's in that? I've never tried that before, you know? And often for me, sometimes I could do a number of things. Sometimes I would just eat before, like I really want to be there to be with these people, not to try lots of different foods that are a surprise or a mystery. Another thing was to just bring like something that works for me, like maybe bring my own food, like my own little Tupperware, and then like a common salad for the group. I remember at times people going, well, what do you got there? Like, oh, actually that's mine because I have food allergies or food stuff, you know? But whatever it takes. Another option is to just call ahead and find out what's happening. I actually do a regular potluck with some people in OA, and we'll tell each other what we're bringing. So it's balanced. So there's always a fruit there. It's always a vegetable, just sort of work it out. So, you know, we don't have like three fruits and, you know, two things of rice and that's it. So just advanced planning, you know, one way or another is a big part of it. Another thing related to a potluck is a party with an unknown menu, you know, and again, it's that big surprise thing. Weddings. Weddings can be one of the trickier ones. You know, it's sort of somebody's really programmed the food in a certain way. And often I found that at weddings, if I just, the wedding cake is the classic one. I once lost them at my abstinence. I was 6 months into OA and somebody said to me, oh, you have to have a bite of the bride and groom's cake. It would be an insult to not have it. And it's like, sounds good to me, right? And I like cake and I'm a food addict. So that narrative just played right out into a cake in my mouth. And so now I'll just simply, in the beginning, go to one of the waiters, hey, I have a food allergy. When the cake is cut, can I have some fresh fruit? And, you know, lo and behold, what, 10% of America is diabetic? They're used to that, you know? So you just say it in advance, and all of a sudden, instead of a piece of cake being popped in front of my face, a little fruit bowl is. Like, I don't even have to deal with, you know, say, no, I don't want that. So just, again, advanced planning. Thanksgiving, I've probably heard more people struggle with Thanksgiving in OA. There's the combination of like the family members, which there may be baggage and issues with, combined with the whole idea that it's a feast holiday, right? Like that's what people do at Thanksgiving. They overeat, you know, we sort of joke like what we do every day, they just do once a year. Like that's their day to binge, is, you know, America's overeat day. And so again, making a plan sometimes before, often the food's laid out on some kind of table, figuring out what it is before, maybe calling a sponsor, calling in advance, but just having a plan. So it's just not gosh, that looks good, you know, and all of a sudden it's too much. And then the last category is travel, you know, and particularly unfamiliar places. Two or three years ago, I had a trip to Asia, and it was a 21-day trip to Japan and Hong Kong, and it was all restaurants. And, you know, I had no kitchen there, which means I was eating out 63 times in 21 days. And I was so happy to come back the same weight after, you know, eating out. And, you know, menus were in different languages, and I didn't understand what the food was, and it was very, very different time changes. But I just had a really rigorous plan of, like, calling my sponsor and using the internet to go to meetings and literature and, you know, just a whole bunch of stuff, talking to another man in OA who'd been in Asia extensively, like just doing a bunch of things so that I could manage to deal with 63 meals in other countries at restaurants I'd never been before. You know, it was daunting, even the idea of going into it, but I spent a lot of time planning. And so, you know, that's a big part of it. Recently, I was with a friend on vacation in Ocean City, New Jersey, and she was struggling with her abstinence. And she said, whenever she goes on the boardwalk, she gets so triggered by the, you know, saltwater taffy and pretzels, and like every other stall on these boardwalk places is basically sugar and flour and junk food. And she didn't even want to go on the boardwalk, which she loves. It's her vacation. And we brainstormed and said, what time do those places open? Oh, like 10 or 11 a.m. Let's go for boardwalk walks at 8 a.m. or 7 a.m. before they open. And lo and behold, you can have that beautiful boardwalk experience in the ocean and not be fighting, you know, all the food stuff. And again, she was coming back from relapse. You know, she just needed as much safety as she can. Another thing is time zones. Oh my goodness, when you're changing time zones, it's a win or a loss one way or another. Meals get either condensed or expanded with the time, and you have to play games and maybe put snacks in there. But again, have a plan, talk to someone, figure it out, and know it's maybe a little hungry or a couple meals may be condensed, and you know it'll be okay, but planning is the key to it. I've heard a lot of people struggle with cruise ships. I sort of joke there, like, maybe you should just take a canoe, you know, because cruise ships are really so much about overeating, right? There's like buffets from 6 a.m. to midnight. I only took a cruise once in my life, some small cruise, but I called them up. I wrote them an email. I told them I had food restrictions. I couldn't eat this. I, you know, sent a fairly detailed email. When I got there, they let me meet with one of the kitchen staff, and they completely accommodated me. And I was, you know, 7 days on a cruise ship, and I got the right food and came back abstinent. And, you know, all these other things were happening that I couldn't touch. That was okay. Kind of like waved to them, old friends, so to speak, or not friends really, but just kept my food, you know? So a lot of this is really just being aware of what the triggers are in any category, and finding some way to manage it, and then getting the support. You know, the whole beauty of OA is a lot of these things I can't do alone, but if I call a sponsor, call someone who's been through this and just say, hey, like, I still remember Asia. There's a guy in OA who spent a year in China, you know, which is similar to Hong Kong. And he had all this advice because he'd been abstinent for a year in China, you know, which helped me. So I feel like, you know, this fellowship is like crowdsourcing experience, strength, and hope. You know, someone out there has dealt with something that maybe I can't figure out, but you can, or you have that wisdom. And if I'm vulnerable and say, yikes, help, what do you think I should do? And, you know, this, likely someone out there will have that help. And then to me, the program is the power of us, right? The higher powers, you guys, I look at this 50 little squares, and the 50 of you, your experience, strength, and hope is way more powerful than me as one person, you know, and that's sort of, you know, what OA means to me. So that said, we're going to flip to the exercise. Again, all you do is take this form. You'll see, just click on boxes, or you can write in things, stuff. And you can also just write in free text here in the blue box, or you can just do it on a pencil and paper. You know, there's nothing magic about this form, but for the next 10 minutes, go ahead and write in as many things as you like, examples of triggers, pick a few of them and write what your management strategies are. And then we'll go to both sharing and question and answer, just like we did in the first hour. And that, thank you.
Thank you, Alan.